I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, my dear sisters, we are all walking on the same road. Sometimes stumbling, sometimes carrying heavy loads, but all the times the strength of women and ladies is the thing that everybody would talk about. This program is not me talking to you, but us walking together, learning from each other's steps. So let's begin this journey side by side. Wherever you are, I hope you're doing well. And this is once more Asma, who's got the honor to be your host in here. And with me, I have a very, very dear guest, Sister Mahdiya. Assalamu alaikum and welcome.
Alaikum salam. Thank you for having me, Sister Asma.
Thank you for coming here, first of all. And second of all, we have a ritual in here. Whoever who comes gives us a very brief introduction about themselves and their field of studies and their background.
Okay, so I've come from originally from England, but lived in Central Africa for quite a few number of years. And then I've recently moved to Qom, enjoying it a lot.
Well, as a result of many issues, many factors, there might be families who would migrate into non-Islamic countries. And they have their own reasonings, so they cannot come back and have that Islamic environment anymore. They have this schooling that is going to affect their children, which is not non-Islamic. And also, wherever they go, the environment is actually non-Islamic. So in order for her to bring this Islamic environment into her house, are there any authentic, tangible ways for you to suggest to her?
Well, women, or even the mother and the father both, mm-hmm. should create this in the house for the children. It's just daily Islamic routines. Practice the Islamic routines daily, you know, waking up early and praying and sitting together for breakfast and reciting Surah Fatiha and, you know, having a corner for prayers, posters everywhere. It's like, you know, building an environment in the house. In an Islamic country, it's not difficult nowadays. There are many countries which, you know, they provide where you can get all kinds of material where you can decorate the house for the children. And also I would suggest basic everyday gestures and actions that we do. So once the children are home from school, you put in all those actions, you know, when you're reciting Bismillah and Salawat and, you know, namaz timings and the prayer room. That's the best thing ever, you know, having a prayer room. Mm-hmm. And then all around the house, you've got your du'as, you know, stuck on the walls before wudu. And that will create, and that will really give the children and the parents as well, that even though you're in a non-Islamic country, you've still got Islam. Islam is still there. So in your house, you've stepped in, you're away from all the other, you know, negative non-Islamic bits, and you're in your own. So yeah, creating that environment is not that difficult. One just needs to concentrate on the daily actions, and the children will follow.
So you can create that mini Islamic environment mm-hmm. without isolating children from the outside world.
Yes, you can. But remember, it's difficult in a way, because they are mostly, if you count the hours, they're probably mostly outside
exactly.
in school,
that's
rather than at home. So that's when it's challenging. So that's when the amount of time that they're at home, that's when you really need to ingrain it. You really, really have to put a lot of effort into it. So there's background background sounds which you can have all around in your house all the time. Mm-hmm. So the TV should not be on those channels which are non-Islamic. So you would have the Islamic channels.
You have to choose the programs.
The programs.
That are going to feed the thought of your family.
And also have background, you know, background sounds, which is good, from the TV or the radio, just around the house slowly going on. That's the best thing. And If your children are even smaller, younger than 10, then that really works, because then that sound is going to stay in their minds forever.
Yeah.
A bit older, then you would have to, then it would be challenging, and you would have to really sit down and sometimes even talk to them and say, you know, but always be together. Never, ever, you know, eat meals individually, always eat meals together, recite things together, have a morning session of Quran recitation. All this really helps in building
an environment. And revive that sense of the holy month of Ramadan, yeah. I guess,
that's
in every
month.
Day of your life.
Yeah, yeah. That's because, 1 month, which really helps. That month really helps, because that's when you're actually...
It's the time of revival.
Yes, that's... Yeah. So that month, one should not let go of the routine of the month of Ramadan, you know, when you wake up together to eat, and then you break the fast together. So that routine should stay there. Exactly. And the month of Muharram, same. Mm-hmm. You know, the month of Muharram and Safar, you have your house decorated in black.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Welcome back. This is Muslim Lady. Thank you for staying with us. We're talking about how women can actually create a mini Islamic environment while they're living in a non-Islamic country, which is very much of a challenging job to do. But then she's got a lot of opportunities, I guess, there in order to know the ways of how to get closer to her family, and also in order to figure out some new ways in order to actually keep this sense of Islamic heritage alive even in there. The woman is at home. Most of the time, the migration happens because the man is going to get a new job.
Okay.
And the woman, for her, in order to get engaged in the societal issues, like in order to be active in society, it takes time. This is, I'm talking about the general conditions. I'm not talking about exceptions. So it's mostly the man who is outside the home. Mm-hmm. The woman is at home. The children are at a school. And the thing that happens is that in his behavior, you're going to see the change. Time passes by and you would gradually notice that there is a change in even this act of worship.
I think it shouldn't affect him. If he was, prior to his migration, he was a pious and, well, not pious, but a practicing Muslim, then it shouldn't affect him. Because nowadays, from what I know, in the UK, and it's very possible that they have, they provide Muslims with the necessary, what do you call it? For example, they have the prayer rooms and they have halal food in the canteens and everything. So it shouldn't affect him. He should continue practicing his religion, but it shouldn't affect him. And then there are, maybe when there are days, holy days, when his work doesn't allow him to go to the mosque or doesn't give him day off.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be, yes, that would be a bit of a challenge, because then he would disconnect from religion a bit. Because, for example, the shahadat of a holy personality, and he can't go to the mosque, he's not allowed, he hasn't got a day off, then that would be a bit. And sometimes, yes, non-Islamic countries, I'm talking about the UK again, working hours are hard. Depends what kind of work he's gone for. If his hours are long and hard and he's tired, there's no way he's going to feel spiritually uplifted. And yes, so then the woman has to step in and arrange the house according for the children and for him, so that he brings him back, you know.
Bring them back to their reality.
Exactly, and then again, if she's going to be a nice practicing Muslim, pious and doing her Muslim duty, then she'll, you know, give him some time to, or give him some a kind of feeling where he feels less stressed.
Yeah.
And he will oblige, you know, because, like I said, long working hours and hard work will leave him less spiritual.
He'd be drained.
So she'll have to step in there. So then she'll have to work around that. So it's going to be challenging for her if she's got young kids who needs an Islamic environment, and then the husband who needs
the husband as well. So she's got a lot to do. I guess the first months are going to be very challenging.
It would be difficult. Yes, it would be challenging for the couple. And they don't have to hold things together. But then it shouldn't be that, it shouldn't be so, like you can't, you don't have to do so much. You just, like, going to the mosque, praying on time, fasting if it's the month of Ramadan, little bits like that. And then once they're settled and the hours are fine, you know, then it all depends again on the hours, the work that he's going for. It depends. Sometimes it's all very less hours and the work is not so hard. So it can't be very difficult. It all depends.
So at the beginning, it might sound very chaotic and you have to manage everything all together and to bring everybody to their core, to the very reality that they belong to. But then it takes time. You know, we have this ritual of disturbing food in between the needy people. I guess this is also going to help the children to feel the sense of spirituality, even in a non-Islamic country. Yeah. Sharing things with people who are not even like you, like they do not share the same religion and they perhaps do not share the same perspective even.
Yes, so that again helps. And there are so many organizations, charitable organizations, and they're not necessarily Muslims. And yes, so engaging in those helps as well. So get children into, you know, take them and show them. There are soup kitchens and there are places where the needy go. So that can help. And they can understand that this, although these are not, they're not Muslims, but we're helping them despite the fact that they're not Muslims, so we're still helping them. So you take children and show them the ropes. But then again, in non-Islamic countries nowadays, schools do this, other organizations do this. They take them, they take children.
Yeah, and I guess media has changed many things. Like even now, the farthest place of the world, the other side of the world also knows about your religion. It's not like when you go somewhere else, you cannot practice your own religion. Yeah. And all the countries have set some rules, more or less, like not all the countries, but they have this side, this perspective of there are some immigrants who've got other perspectives and have got different religion to practice. So it's not like if you practice your own religion, then you're going to be missed out from the entire society.
No. It's true.
It's no longer like that.
No. They do know. They know that you're a Muslim. So these are your requirements. If you're in school, they provide halal food. They give you prayer rooms. This is all very common now. It's nothing new. So they do accommodate. Yeah. So it's easier. But again, with your peers, if your children,
exactly,
it's very difficult because the peers are not all Muslims and they come up with, so you would have to deal with foul language. You will have to deal with questions which are really now very inappropriate.
Very challenging.
Yep, inappropriate. You know, they would make you tingle, you know, your goosebumps. You would get goosebumps because the things that they talk about, like for now, it's all about LGBT. And so children would come home and they would ask you this. So you would have to be prepared. So after having an environment, after creating an Islamic environment at home, you would then really need to focus on when my child is going to come and ask me this, how am I going to answer?
So you must be up to date as well.
Always.
Your knowledge must be up to date.
Absolutely, because even in Islamic country nowadays, these questions are coming.
Exactly.
So it's not only non-Islamic. Yeah. It's all the media. It's all social media, which is bringing all this out. And so it's double the work in another country. Yeah.
Very true.
You have to be well prepared.
But what we've been talking about in today's episode of Muslim Lady was the fact that women are usually the moral anchor of the family. And they're the one And they are the ones whose existence is going to actually spread tranquility and peace and this spirituality that everybody would look for in order to continue and deal with the problems of life. What we talked about was her role as this moral anchor in a different country that is non-Islamic, which doubles her actual duties and responsibilities. She's got a lot of things to do, as you suggested, like she can actually arrange the house in a way that it would revive this sense of spirituality in the house and then remind the children of where they belong to. And also, you talked about this, which is very important, that she has to keep her knowledge and information up to date. there needs to be an update with her knowledge.
Remember, knowledge is for everybody, not only men. So women have to be equally knowledgeable.
Very true. And as the result of her, because of her interaction with children and kids, she has to be very much more like a philosopher. She has to be starting with everything, dissecting different issues, and be prepared with a reasonable answer.
Yeah.
Because life, even in the Islamic countries, you have to be prepared for the paradoxical questions that you might get. So I hope wherever you are, dear ladies, you do best with your responsibilities, and God give you this, and God, and I hope that God would grant you with this much of actually preparedness in order to deal with all these obstacles that you might face in your life. So this was all for today. I hope you have just enjoyed that. Until another episode of Muslim Lady, wassalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.
I know I'm waiting for something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.